Well, good afternoon. So let's talk meditation. Who would like to share your meditation experience? We would?
Well, I have questions because mm-hmm. we started it after many years off and on, and now I understand what the phrase practicing as if your hair is on fire is all about. And that's where I'm at. So I'm trying to, I can dedicate as much time as necessary. Okay, I'm totally in charge of my world now. Oh, I've chosen wow. to do that. I don't care what it takes. I don't care what it means. Whatever happens, this is it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what would you suggest would be, how could I implement my practice so that I can proceed? I don't want to seem like I'm in a rush. It's more like I'm eager.
That's good. Eager is good.
What can I do to progress as quickly as possible?
Tell me what you're doing now and how much time you spend there.
I spend usually at least 30 to 45 minutes twice a day sitting. Mm-hmm. I read for 2 or 3 hours a day, Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path. I do research online as far as retreats, places to go. I'm currently signed up to go to the Dhammadina, the Insight Meditation Center that Ruth Dennison has mm-hmm. over in Joshua Tree. I plan to go there for a week.
When is that?
It's a woman's retreat from April 19th through May 6th.
Okay.
I'm going to go in the middle of that around the full moon. Mm-hmm. But so it's a whole new world in a way for me than what I was, you mm-hmm. know, doing 20 years ago or whatever. But so how can I make it happen?
So you're sitting 20 to 30 minutes twice a day now?
No, almost 45 minutes twice
almost
a day.
Almost 45 minutes twice a day. Great. And what practice are you doing while you're sitting?
It's primarily focusing on the breath and the body movements. It's basically insight meditation, but focusing on the breath.
Are you noting and labeling things?
Yes. And I don't have too much trouble. Sometimes it's more visual. I get images rather than thoughts. So
images rather than verbal thoughts?
Rather than actual thinking thoughts. It's more mm-hmm. pictures.
And you label those pictures?
I as soon as I notice it, I let it go. I don't even really label it. I just notice it and it goes.
Okay. But the anchor for your attention is the breath?
Mm-hmm.
At the nose or at the abdomen?
That's a hard question. It sort of shifts. I try to stay with whatever I can use as a focus. I notice when I get pulled away, though, mm-hmm. Sometimes I end up having to count if my monkey mind is...
Okay, well, I would suggest that you use as your meditation object the sensations of the breath in one particular place. Forget the breath, just the sensations it produces in one particular place. I usually recommend the sensations as the air enters and leaves your nose, if you can feel that all right. Mm-hmm. There are other people that can't feel that so well, they can observe the rising and falling of the abdomen, but long term, nose is better. But it's not the breath, it's the sensations, it's your object. So it's a really clearly defined object, and anytime you realize your attention is elsewhere, then just bring it back there. Okay? And twice a day, that's good. If you're serious about this, if your hair's on fire, then I would try to get up to doing an hour twice a day, okay, and maybe more than that later, but an hour twice a day, it's a good solid place to advance from. You'll need to choose a specific practice technique to use. You'll need to decide whether you like to use noting and labeling. Now, if you're going to Ruth Dennison, you're probably not going to be doing that. You're going to be doing more of the Goenka style. You'll be a lot of body scanning. Mm-hmm. Have you ever meditated with her before?
No.
Okay. So, well, that's fine. It's good to go and do retreats with different people and learn different methods. But to really make progress, you need to choose one method and make that your main method. And mostly that will be what you do. With variations, with other things mixed in that you have a specific reason for doing a different kind of practice. But consistency, it's sort of like the meditation object, the method as a whole. You choose one and follow it consistently. Okay? So, any other questions?
Any thoughts about a teacher, finding a teacher?
You live in Tucson?
Yes, I do.
Well, you could certainly start coming on Sunday or on Thursday evenings to the sessions that we have here, and I could teach you the practice that we use here. You'd be welcome. Also, I live in Cochise Stronghold in Cochise County. If you know where that is,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also, every Sunday we have meditation and Dharma talk there too, which you'd be welcome to join us on, and we'll give you directions to get there and the schedule if you like. So, looking for a teacher, you've come to one.
So. It's a good beginning, yes. Thank you.
Okay. Yes?
I have confused myself about the distinction between picking a method and sticking with it.
Between which?
Between picking a method and sticking with it versus progress.
Versus progress?
Progress, yeah. It looks to me like you follow your breath for, like, say, 2 or 3 years, but eventually you're gonna do more.
The method doesn't end where it begins. It changes as you go along.
Yeah, and right. That's the confusing part.
Well, okay, it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
You know, in the 10 stages. By the way, I should say to you, if you go to the Dharma Treasure website, mm-hmm. There's some things that you might like to download. There's a meditation manual, and there's also the preparation for practice. These are also things I think that they sometimes give new people when they first come here too. So, but anyway, in terms of the 10 stages, by the time you get to stage 5, you're starting to do a body scanning practice. Not the same as the Goenka one that you're going to learn from Rita Dennison. Stage 6, you're doing experiencing the whole body with the breath. Stage 7, you'll start doing some jhana. You might start doing some jhana practice in stage 6. Also doing very close-in focusing. It's basically meditation on the arising and passing away phenomena. Still using the breath, but it's a different take on that.
Okay. I just clarified it. It's a different take on the breath.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Experiencing the whole body with the breath is a different take on it. It's quite
yeah,
a different experience.
I guess I thought that as long as you were still breathing, the first way, but you're right. You're not.
Yeah. Yeah. There's changes. And that's true with most of these, any meditation method you follow. At a certain point, you develop the skills that the beginning practice was designed to develop, and this allows you then to expand your repertoire, have other takes on the same kind of thing.
Okay.
Yes?
How did you choose your method?
How did I choose it?
Yeah.
It chose me.
So...
Well, no, I tried various things before the method that I use now. I tried to teach myself to do Advaita Vedanta meditation practice. That didn't work too well. I did transcendental meditation for a while. then when I became involved with Buddhism, I started doing the noting practice, the one that I was referring to. It's called the Mahasi style insight practice. That didn't go very well for me. And so another teacher who is a student of the same teacher who taught me the noting practice came back from a monastery in Thailand and offered to teach me this particular method, which I found worked for me enormously better than anything that I tried before. And so I stayed with that and developed that further. So maybe saying it chose me is a little bit facetious. I mean, you find a method, you might try a few different things, but you'll find one that works, and that's the one.
So it's okay to explore.
It's okay to explore, especially in the beginning. Now, on the one hand, you want to give different methods a reasonable try, but you'll find that some just seem to suit you better than others. Once you've done that, then once you've picked one, that's when you stop experimenting, unless you find yourself having done the same thing for years and you're not making any progress, then you might want to experiment some more. But you have to, you do have to choose something and stick with it for a while and not get, don't just go jumping from one thing to another, because that you won't gain anything by that.
So do they all lead to the same place anyway?
They all lead to the same place. They go by different routes. Some can take longer than others, but of course it all depends on you and how well a particular method is suited to you personally. So would somebody else like to share your meditation experiences? Welcome. Have you been here before?
I have not.
You haven't? Well, it's good to have you. Thank you for joining us.
I'm new also.
You're new also. Well, welcome to you too. So we're just discussing meditation practices, so all questions are welcome at this point.
I would just share my experience a little bit, since we were just talking about finding a practice and so forth. And I've experimented with quite a bit of different styles and techniques. I started off with Tibetan Buddhism, with a particular lineage, the more analytically oriented lineage. Then I tried other Tibetan Buddhist practices and meditations, and then I did some Goenka meditation. I stayed with that for a while. And then I moved from that to sort of refining that in a way, working with a particular practice in a sutra called Anapanasati Sutra, mm-hmm. Breath of Mindfulness with Breathing. And then I find that this technique that Chiladasa teaches is a refined way of doing that practice. And I've stuck with it, this practice, for 4 years, and I find it to be the most valuable practice that I've encountered so far.
Yes.
So I'm actually wondering then, how does your practice differ than a mindfulness practice differ than, let's say, Thich Nhat Hanh mindfulness type of training practice?
Well,
can you repeat his question?
I'm not. Yeah, he was asking how the practice that I teach differs from what someone like Thich Nhat Hanh teaches, and I don't really know what practice to. Thich Nhat Hanh teaches, so I can't really answer that question. Is that a practice that you're familiar with?
Yes.
Okay. Well then, perhaps you would share with us the basics of that practice, and then I would be much more able to answer your question.
Well, like many practices, mindfulness, it is using the breath and bringing awareness to the breath, mm-hmm. and bringing awareness to whatever is happening. And I guess the metaphor would be something like the doorman. I always think of that and watching what comes by.
Yeah.
And but the difference between mindfulness practices is where he suggests that the notion of mindfulness takes place in all activities. It's not centrally within the realm of meditation, but whatever you're doing, you can apply it to this mindfulness practice. So it's not meditation mindfulness, it's mindfulness as kind of a way of being. And of course, it takes a little more demanding than just sitting meditation.
I would certainly agree with all of that. I make some finer distinctions. I distinguish between attention and awareness. And so I teach people to use the sensations of the breath as an anchor for their attention, while at the same time cultivating a powerful awareness of everything else that's going on. When you're sitting quietly in meditation, that's mostly just maybe a few ambient sounds, some sensations in your body, except that that same awareness can be applied to what's going on in your mind. So you become quite aware of the events that are tending to draw attention away from the meditation, you know, the mental events that are drawing meditation away from, the attention away from the meditation object, away from the sensations of the breath. So putting your attention on the sensations of the breath, and yeah, using the metaphor of a gatekeeper, so you're watching the air as it comes in and out. Well, you're not really watching the air, are you? Because you can't see the air or feel the air. But you have sensations that are produced as the air moves. And so that's in the role of the gatekeeper. But I distinguish attention as the gatekeeper, while awareness is exercising much broader awareness. And that really what we're doing is we're cultivating these abilities to stabilize attention and to be more aware, in order that we'll have these same abilities the rest of the time when we're not sitting on a cushion. So it sounds like it's in many ways similar, but I think the approach I take is maybe a little more detailed, and make some distinctions, some finer distinctions, mostly for the sake of being able to cultivate these skills more effectively. Defining things a little more clearly.
Do you utilize kind of Vipassana approach?
You say Vipassana approach. Vipassana means insight. And really all of these practices are intended to lead to insight. I mean, you train your mind so that you will be able to recognize experiences that have the potential to give up insights to allow you to achieve insight. And so that you have the mental faculties in order to glean the insights that are being offered by those experiences. So really I would say that any valid meditation method, its intention is Vipassana. And it's confusing when, you know, like IMS and Spirit Rock, and some people, including Goenka, they call their meditation Vipassana, you know. And that doesn't, as if that were referring to a specific method or a technique, but it doesn't. It refers to an end goal, objective.
I guess I know. In practice, was identifying aspects of the mind, anger,
And so on. And see, this is where insight comes from, observing your mind and seeing what's actually taking place in your mind. So an insight would come, if you're observing your mind, you might have an insight about anger, that you see how anger arises, and you see the kind of effects that anger has on your mind, the kinds of thoughts it elicits, and so forth. And this, by observing this, this can give you insights into your own mind and why you react to things the way that you do. And it can also, in the process, change the way that you react to things through the act of observation and through what you learn by it, by observing. It causes changes to take place. So if that sort of thing that you're referring to?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the method I teach, really, if we make this distinction between attention and awareness, if we can stabilize attention, basically we get it out of the way so we can exercise our faculty of awareness much more fully. And then we try to become more aware of what's going on in our own minds. And we have the faculty of attention at any time we can use it. We've anchored the attention to the sensations of the breath more than anything else to get it out of the way while we develop this more powerful awareness, and it becomes an awareness of the mind itself. Then we're allowed to make a little shift where now we're watching the mind watch the breath. And we're also watching all the things that the mind does in the course of watching the breath and not watching the breath. And there are emotional reactions that, in the course of you're sitting for 45 minutes or an hour, the different emotions that arise and pass away, mental states, feelings of judgment about the quality of your practice. You might feel impatience, or on the other hand, you might be going well and you have a lot of satisfaction, and you notice that a feeling of pleasantness arises. When your attention's stable for a while, you might notice that there's a feeling of calm, clarity that comes. So what you're doing is you're cultivating the ability to really observe what's going on in your mind. And this carries over into your daily life as well. You're having a conversation with somebody and they say something and pushes your button, and you're much more aware of everything going on. You're aware of your own reactions. You're more aware of what that person was really doing or saying, rather than just being aware of your kind of quick jump to a conclusion. This is what they're about, seeing it through your own narrow little perspective. What more can I tell you? Well, that is the important work. Is really cultivating this mindfulness. And I define mindfulness as an optimal interaction between attention and awareness. And so as you cultivate mindfulness, you've just got this incredible tool. You begin to see so much more and understand so much more. It does lead to insight, but it also leads to changes. Just simply by observing in that kind of way what's happening, those parts of your mind that make things happen the way they do are given the opportunity to assess the results of what they do. And so you have this experience that you're changing without doing anything to yourself. Well, actually, there's nobody in here to do anything to me anyway. It's all these different parts of my mind. And through mindfulness, I'm just making a lot more information available to those different parts of my mind. So that part of me that maybe has made me into a person that tends to be irritable and angry, has the opportunity to see in a much clearer way what the effects are of being an irritable and angry person. And so then I don't have to do anything, because as those parts of me that have been driving these reactions blindly for years begin to really get the bigger picture, then they reprogram themselves and I become a less angry person as a result. That's the magic of mindfulness.
And how do you know cues for those effects?
How do you...
Well, let's say I'm angry.
Yeah.
Obviously there's something registers within me.
Yes.
do I'm observing what registers within me, and where do I observe that? Do I observe it just, I'm I have a point though, do I observe it as just a feeling, or do I observe it as a felt sense sensation? How do I know?
See, that's you want to observe it in all of those ways, and that's the way awareness works. Like, attention focuses in and isolates one thing. And that's a problem. Usually, somebody says something, and it triggers a reaction, you start to feel angry. And you just focus in on the anger that you feel and on what they said. If you cultivate awareness, awareness is taking in all of these other things. How you feel emotionally, how you feel physically. You take in the effect it has on the other person when you react, however you react, whatever you say or do. And that keeps going on. It's not, it's in this moment, but it's also in each new moment as it unfolds. You're applying the mindfulness to this process as it unfolds. So somebody said something to you and it triggered an emotional reaction and that in turn caused you to say or do something. But you're taking in the whole big picture. How do I feel in my body when this happens? What are the other emotions? What are the internal conflicts that are elicited? Even as I'm saying something reactively, there's a part of me that says, oh, no. You start to begin to know all this stuff. Whereas usually it's kind of been pushed in the background. You dominate, your attention focuses on just a narrow part of your experience. And you don't really learn anything new from it. Other than afterwards you say, oh no, I did it again.
Are there exercises that you prescribe for working with attention and cultivating awareness? I know a lot of meditators, long-time meditators, who I would say, in my judgment, have cultivated very little self-awareness.
That's true. That is really true. And that's basically why I decided to start teaching meditation, because a lot of people were practicing in a way that wasn't really achieving the result. So yeah, there's specific things like focusing your attention on the sensations of the breath, but maintaining an extrospective awareness of sensations and sounds around you. Mm-hmm. Because so many people don't realize that that's what you're supposed to do. They think you're supposed to block out everything else and just focus. And then if you do that, you're not achieving what the meditation is about. You won't get any self-awareness from that. You'll just get really bored with the sensations of the breath.